this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, How Far Your Money Goes, How Purchasing Power in the Triangle Compares to Other U.S. Cities. And the headlines on the front page, the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with another headline, Under How Far Your Money Goes, More Bang for Your Buck, How Prices in the Triangle Stack Up Against Other U.S. Cities. And this article is written by Jeff Jeffrey. Let's say you and your significant other are heading out for a date night. The plan is to go see a play and then grab drinks downtown. You're going to use Uber, so parking isn't a problem. Let's say this is a very special night, the night you're going to propose. You have a diamond ring in your pocket. You're nervous. But at least you can take comfort in the fact that you're in the Triangle, where your money is going to go a lot further than it would in many other parts of the country. Cost data compiled by the Business Journals, a publication of Triangle Business Journal, parent American City Business Journals, shows that prices for many goods and services in Raleigh and Durham are far lower than those in many of the 43 markets under ACBJ's umbrella. Take the cost of tickets to a play. For the best seat in the house for a North Carolina theater production on a Saturday night at Raleigh's Memorial Auditorium, each ticket would cost about $82. That's among the least expensive ticket prices in the country, putting Raleigh on par with Austin, St. Louis, and Sacramento. If the play were at the Durham Performing Arts Center, it would cost a little more, about $130 for the best ticket to a Saturday night show. That's roughly what it would cost in Houston, Memphis, or Miami. But it's nowhere near as expensive as in New York, San Antonio, or Phoenix, where comparable seats would cost upwards of $400 per ticket. Raleigh and Durham are also among the least expensive cities in the country when it comes to buying drinks. A top-shelf martini at the largest downtown hotel in both Raleigh and Durham costs about $11, plus tip. Compare that to the cost of the same drink in Philadelphia, where it's $3 more expensive, or in Memphis, where you'd pay $5 more. In New York, a top-shelf martini costs about $18, and in Miami, the top-shelf cocktail commands a whopping $33. What's in that drink? Vince Whitehurst, co-owner of Foundation, a bar in downtown Raleigh, says a lot more goes into the price of a cocktail than the cost of liquor. It also has to include the cost of labor and rent. Rent is a huge factor, Whitehurst says. You hear of turnover all the time because of the rising rents downtown, but it's nothing like the rents you'd be paying in some of the larger cities. Office rents in downtown Raleigh and Durham are indeed well above the national average, according to the Business Journal survey. In Raleigh, 6,000 square feet of Class A office space in a multi-story downtown building costs about $14,000 per month, roughly $1,000 cheaper than what it would cost in Austin, and $1,000 more than what it would cost in Nashville. In Durham, the same amount and type of office space costs about $12,600. In San Francisco, which tops the list in office rent, comparable office space costs $34,000 per month. As for that diamond engagement ring, romantic suitors can expect to pay far less in the Triangle. In Raleigh, a 1-carat diamond engagement ring with a VS1 clarity and a D color sells for about $8,300 at a discount diamond importer. In Durham, a similar ring at a chain jewelry store sells for $13,000. Compare that to Albany or Seattle, where popping the question with such a diamond ring would cost close to $20,000. Trey Bailey, co-owner of Bailey's Fine Jewelry, says having multiple public and private universities in the Triangle makes it easier for jewelry stores to offer lower prices because they can make it up on volume. There are a lot of employed young professionals looking to get married, Bailey says, noting that Bailey's Fine Jewelry has doubled its diamond business over the past 6 years. Low-cost opportunities. Ted Connor, Vice President of Economic Development at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce, says the relatively low cost of living in the Triangle is a key selling point in talks with companies looking to relocate. But low prices aren't everything. The number one thing companies ask about is talent, Connor says. On that, we fare pretty well, given the universities in the area and the business community. A city's access to talented professionals often trumps cost of living, he says, citing the example of a company that decided to move to Boston over Durham, despite the higher cost of living in the northeastern city. That said, many companies like the idea of moving to or expanding in an area where prices are lower because they can adjust their salary scales to match the market. A low cost of living can be especially important to a company when it is considering whether to relocate its corporate headquarters. Employees who are being asked to move their families often want to know how much further their salary will go in the new location. Tom White, Director of Economic Development Partnership at NC State University, says the cost of living and quality of life in the Triangle played into the recent decision by CBC Americas Corporation, the U.S. division of a major Japanese conglomerate, to move its U.S. headquarters from Long Island to Cary. In Raleigh, it's possible to find a relatively new 3,000-square-foot home for about $420,000. In Durham, a similar house can be found for $253,000. Raleigh and Durham's housing prices also fare well against other mid-sized cities. In Austin, a 3,000-square-foot home that's less than 5 years old can cost $749,500. In Nashville, it could be $697,000. And in Tampa, you could pay as much as $1.9 million. Add in the relative lack of traffic congestion and availability of things to do in the Triangle, and Connor says many companies see that as a way to keep their employees happy. That means a lot to people, Connor says. When it takes people 2 hours to get to work or get to the airport, they have no personal time. That can take a toll on family life. On the high side, Raleigh is among the most expensive in the country when it comes to the cost of medical care. Data compiled on the Business Journal's behalf by San Francisco-based Castlight Health found that Raleigh had some of the highest costs when it comes to 8 common medical procedures. Castlight did not look at medical costs in Durham. With an average cost of $1,366, Raleigh was second only to Milwaukee in the cost of a CAT scan of a patient's head or brain. In Milwaukee, a CAT scan costs $1,580 on average. Patients in Raleigh pay $2,105 on average to get an MRI in Raleigh, not much less than the $2,307 they would pay in Indianapolis, or the $2,719 they'd pay in Milwaukee, the two most expensive cities in the country for MRI scans. Raleigh also ranked among the most expensive cities in the country when it comes to women's health procedures. The average cost of a follow-up OBGYN visit in Raleigh, $84, was enough to put the city in a four-way tie with Atlanta, Chicago, and Milwaukee as the 6th most expensive cities for those visits. Thomas Hoger, director of the Public Health Economics Program at RTI International, says a city's population, the number of hospitals and medical providers in the area, and how frequently the procedures are being used can all contribute to their cost. Horger adds that most patients don't pay much attention to the cost of their care because they have health insurance. But those high costs can be a concern for employers paying for health plans. Christopher Chung, CEO of the nonprofit Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says companies looking to relocate rarely ask about the cost of health care in the area. If health care comes up at all, Chung says, the discussion typically focuses on the availability of top-notch specialized care. That's another area where the Triangle, with all the great medical institutions in the area, does really well, Chung says. And with this article, there are a number of related sections. This one is called Stacking Up. All paychecks are not created equal, so the Business Journal's leveled the field. Adjusted salaries for 106 metros are based on regional price parities, cost of living multipliers devised by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis. Here's the local scoreboard. Durham numbers, $58,780. Local average pay adjusted for purchasing power, ranking second. $55,840, unadjusted local average pay, ranking ninth. 5.27%. Percent adjustment in purchasing power, 44th, with a raw adjustment of $2,940, 36th. Raleigh numbers, $49,820. Local average pay adjusted for purchasing power, ranking 26th. $47,430. Unadjusted local average pay, ranking 37th. 5.04%. Percent adjusted in purchasing power, 47th, with a raw adjustment of $2,390, 44th. The next section is called A Trip to the Market. To determine what high-end goods and services cost in major metro areas across the country, the Business Journal staff in each of our 43 markets researched more than 40 notable goods and services and report back what those items cost. While it can be difficult to line up all the items as a true apples-to-apples comparison, and we did ask each market to price an organic Honeycrisp apple, researchers, editors, and reporters in each city tried to match each product as closely to the specific guidelines as possible. Two movie tickets for Saturday night, a show at a first-run theater, Durham, $22.90, Raleigh, $21.12, Business Journal's average, $25.12. Rank among Business Journal markets, Durham 12th, Raleigh 17th. The cost in Austin, $22. Charlotte, $21. Nashville, $24. 2 hours parking near the largest office building. Durham and Raleigh, $4. Business Journal's average, $25. Rank among Business Journal markets, Durham 19th, Raleigh 19th. Cost in Austin, $21. In Charlotte, $12. In Nashville, $15. Drop-in rate for yoga class in your wealthiest zip code, Durham $15, Raleigh $18. Business Journal's average, $23. Rank among Business Journal markets, Durham 10th, Raleigh 7th. Cost in Austin, $17. In Charlotte, $12. In Nashville, $21. Six-pack of the most popular local craft beer, Durham and Raleigh, $8.99. Business Journal's average, $9.59. Both Raleigh and Durham ranked 13th. Cost in Austin, $8.49. Charlotte, $9.99. And Nashville, $8.99. Purebred Labrador Retriever Puppy, AKC Registered, Durham, $600, Raleigh, $650, Business Journal's average, $1,706. Rank among Business Journal markets, Durham 20th, Raleigh 19th, cost in Austin, $2,000, Charlotte, $900, Nashville, $600. Cost per pound of top sirloin, upper-end grocer, organic, Durham and Raleigh, $11.99. Business Journal's average, $16. Both Raleigh and Durham ranked 9th. Cost in Austin, $12.99. Charlotte, $10.99. And Nashville, $12.99. And the standard rate for a round of golf at the number one public course, Durham, $45. Raleigh, $79. Business Journal's average, $75. Rank among Business Journal markets, Durham, 28th, Raleigh, 17th. Cost in Austin, $56. In Charlotte, $64. And in Nashville, $64. And finally, a section called What Say You? How do consumers rate the Triangle's cost of living? A few Raleigh, Durham, and Cary on-the-street shoppers weigh in on how far their dollars go. First, we have Debbie Harper, semi-retired federal employee from Raleigh. It's a really good value to live here, much better than Atlanta, where I grew up. Your paycheck goes a lot further, especially if you know where to shop, though I wish we had a professional ball team. Valencia Dunn, customer service supervisor in Raleigh. The prices are generally pretty good around here. It depends on where you're shopping. I'm an expert at finding sales, but I'm often willing to pay a little more to get better quality, especially when it comes to food. Anna Doherty, a student in Durham. I moved here from New York. My rent was twice as much up there. I also took a lot of cabs. I lived in Brooklyn, so getting out of the city was so much more expensive. One thing I do miss is delivery. Getting food delivered at 3 a.m. here is impossible. And John Park, a student in Durham. I had a certain lifestyle in Atlanta that I wanted to maintain when I moved here. So if I pay more, it's kind of my own fault. I live in a newer apartment, and the rent is similar to what it was there. Durham has about everything you could want, except the variety of choices. The city has one of everything. And Martin Dettelbach, marketing and sales in Cary. I have lived all over the country. The costs here are why you're seeing a migration from New York, New Jersey, and California. For jewelry, you can pay less here than you can even in the Diamond District of New York. The restaurants are just as good. The shopping is pretty good. The taxes are lower, too. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Rebecca Troyer. Bel Canto brings $400,000 at gala. There is very little doubt that soprano Renee Fleming wowed the crowd at the North Carolina Symphony Gala on October 11. Just ask Brad Wilson, who runs Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, Mary Lori Cece, lead attorney at the state treasurer's office, or Jim Hansen, who heads PNC's local operations. Not to miss on the action, some policy influencers, such as former state budget director Art Pope and Captive Air CEO Bob Luddy, were present with their wives as well at this high-octane black tie fest. Fleming, who split her performance in two segments, with spectacular blue and red off-the-shoulder gowns, had Symphony's music director, Grant Llewellyn, by her side as she started on Wagner and a four-set piece of Richard Strauss's last opera, Capriccio. Llewellyn's team was up to the task, no doubt, as the sound grew bolder with the soprano's rising pitch. Symphony officials estimate the evening raised some $400,000, with Merrill Lynch leading the way. Harry bids goodbye to Glenwood. Harry's guitar shop owner, Harry Tooting, didn't quite get the $1.7 million that he was asking for when he put his 3,820-square-foot cinder block building up for sale near the corner of Glenwood Avenue and Peace Street in downtown Raleigh, but he came pretty close. Tooting sold the building that's been home to Harry's guitar shop for the past 27 years for $1.35 million, a price that equates to $353 per square foot. The new owner of the building at 616 Glenwood Avenue is Timothy S. Wood of Chapel Hill. Wood plans to keep the building as is for a while and later evaluate redevelopment opportunities, says Robert Hoyt of the Cushman & Wakefield real estate firm that represented Tooting. Tooting has already relocated his guitar shop to a bigger space at 556 Pylon Drive in West Raleigh. Krawcheck to speak at Elevate Network kickoff luncheon. UNC alum Sally Krawcheck, former CEO of Merrill Lynch, is coming to the Triangle October 23 to introduce the Elevate Network at a luncheon at Prestonwood Country Club. The event marks the official launch of the Triangle chapter of the networking group, which aims to support and promote women in the business world. Krawcheck understands better than some why this type of organization is important. She crawled her way to the top of the banking industry and did it through networking. There's still a gender achievement gap, she tells Biz. The Elevate Network provides women with resources and connections to help them advance in business. The research is clear, she says. Women are better hedge fund managers, better mutual fund managers. They are more risk aware. Biz asks Krawcheck why, if the research is so universal, that women don't yet have equal footing in the C-suite. An object in motion tends to stay in motion, and an object at rest tends to stay at rest, she says. If there aren't women in a business, it can be hard to break into that business. Virtual CEO to hit the road for AdWorks. Real estate-targeted advertising startup AdWorks just teamed up with digital silhouette maker Personas to clone its CEO. Personas created a hologram version of AdWorks CEO Jed Carlson. Digital Jed will be traveling across the country this year at trade shows, hawking AdWorks technology, which follows potential home buyers around the internet, connecting them to real estate agents. Both Personas and AdWorks are based in downtown Durham. Foundation COO snags fellowship for global research. Mason Aylstock, COO of the Research Triangle Foundation, just scored a 2016 Eisenhower Fellowship, a designation that will soon take him across the globe. Aylstock plans to travel to Sweden and Saudi Arabia as part of his fellowship to help identify best practices for the convergence of art, science, technology, and the humanities in global research parks. That research will then directly impact the future of Research Triangle Park's current development project, Park Center. Other past Eisenhower Fellows have included Smedes York of York Properties, Anita Brown Graham of the Institute of Emerging Issues, Rob Burns and Zishan Ul Hassan Usmani of Predictify Me, and Gene Davis of MCNC. And finally, in the You Said It section, reader Facebook comments on recent TBJ stories. On Business Pulse poll, is the decision to close northbound lanes on Capitol Boulevard for 2 years worth it? Harvey Von Zell says, I'll never understand why these projects take years, even decades, and cost so much money. On Chapel Hill, number one among college towns you'll never want to leave, Brett Well says, did they check out UNCW? At least half of my college friends never left. And on Publix confirms new triangle location in Apex, Todd Jenkins says, not going to Garner. Wonder why. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Real Estate page written by Amanda Hoyle. The first article, Kane's Dillon Deck plan moves forward. Raleigh real estate developer John Kane's proposal to build a 950-space parking deck in Raleigh's warehouse district downtown in partnership with the Raleigh City Council appears to be moving forward. There was no opposition when the agreement was discussed at a public hearing October 7, and Kane says final design plans for the project are full speed ahead. Kane's agreement with the city is valued at between $8 million and $11 million, depending on whether the city opts to buy 250 parking spaces or 350 parking spaces at a rate of $32,500 per space. It helps to know what we're going to do now, Kane says. Uncertainty is what kills plans. We know what the city wants and needs now. By comparison, Wake County had budgeted a cost of about $22,592 per parking space when it completed its 991-space parking deck in 2009 at the corner of Davy and McDowell Streets in downtown Raleigh. That project was also considered a public-private partnership deal with Empire Properties and Concord Estridge, which developed the mixed-use The L building of apartments, office, and retail space that wraps around the parking deck. Empire Properties president Andrew Jenkins says the L building residents rent their parking spaces on a monthly basis. Based on the current monthly rent that the county is charging, right now that's $75 a month, he says, and the spaces are non-designated in the deck. As part of the deal with Kane Realty, the city will pay upfront $10,000 per space to Kane and his development partners at Maryland-based Federal Capital Partners by October 31 for the design, land purchase, and permitting for the parking deck project. The final $22,500 per space, less any construction savings, will be paid after the deck is finished. The city and Kane, FCP, will share in the income generated from parking fees from the deck. Publix confirms plans for a new store in Apex. Publix has signed a lease to be the 45,000-square-foot anchor tenant at the proposed Point at Beaver Creek Retail Center at the northeast corner of the intersection of Kelly Road and Olive Chapel Road. The property is across from the Olive Chapel Elementary School and also fronts the NC 540 Western Wake Freeway Toll Road. The store is expected to open in 2017. The new Apex location will be the grocery chain's fifth location confirmed so far in the Triangle region. And in a section called Biggest Deals, led by the $35 million sale of the former Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina headquarters campus in Chapel Hill and five apartment communities across the region, the sales total for major commercial real estate transactions in September topped $223 million. Here's a list of the largest transactions in September. $39.4 million, the Waterford apartment community in Morrisville. $35.75 million, the Regatta at Lake Lynn Apartments in North Raleigh. $35 million, the Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina office campus in Chapel Hill. $34.6 million, the Hamptons at Research Triangle Park Apartments in Durham. $17.25 million, the North Point Crossing Apartments community in North Durham. $15.6 million, Harvest Plaza Shopping Center in North Raleigh. $15.6 million, Shops of Hope Valley Shopping Center in South Durham. $13.8 million, Wake Forest Crossing Retail Center in Wake Forest. $8.25 million, Westchester Apartments in Garner. And $8.2 million, Twin Forks Office Park in North Raleigh. And on the On Healthcare page, written by Jason DeBruin, the main headline, Johnston Health to add colon cancer screening services. Johnston Health will build a new two-room outpatient facility where patients can be screened for cancers. Specifically, Johnston Health will build a gastrointestinal endoscopy ambulatory surgery center to provide cancer screening procedures in an underserved geographical area. The incidence of colorectal cancer in North Carolina has declined since 2003. However, even with that decline, the incidence of colorectal cancer in Johnston County remains higher than that of North Carolina and Wake County. Similarly, the mortality rate for colorectal cancer has declined since 2003, but the mortality rates in Johnston County remain higher than in Wake County or the state as a whole, according to data with the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services. Johnston County has three GI endoscopy rooms, two in Smithfield and one in Clayton, to cover the needs of the county's more than 180,000 population. Compare that to 44 such rooms in Wake County. Johnston's endoscopy rooms had a volume rate more than double that of Wake's and nearly double the state average. Johnston Health projects an average charge of between $1,700 and $1,800 in the first 3 years of operation. The health system projects net patient revenue of $1.7 million in the third year of operation and a net income of $420,000 in that year, which would be fiscal 2018. Especially for non-emergent screening procedures such as colonoscopy, patients will forego the procedure if access is not reasonably sufficient, according to Johnston Health. Although access is driven by a number of factors, including access to gastroenterologists or other physicians credentialed to perform endoscopies, access to GI endoscopy facilities is also a factor. Medical Waste Company to pay North Carolina $2.7 million in settlement. North Carolina will receive $2.7 million as part of a settlement between the federal government and Stericycle Incorporated, a company that disposes of medical waste. Stericycle, based in Lake Forest, Illinois, will pay nearly $27 million, including $2.7 million to North Carolina, for charging millions more than it should have to dispose of medical waste, according to North Carolina Attorney General Roy Cooper. The company did not admit fault. North Carolina, 12 other states, and the federal government contend that Stericycle made false claims by requiring state and local government customers to pay fuel surcharges that did not reflect actual increases in the company's energy costs. The fuel surcharge, amounting to an 18% increase every 9 months, violated prices set by contracts, according to a lawsuit filed by a whistleblower against the company. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Technology page written by Lauren Onisorge. The main headline, How Dell EMC Deal Impacts Triangle Ops. It's official. Austin, Texas tech giant Dell is taking Hopkinton, Massachusetts-based internet storage mammoth EMC private in what's being called a record $67 billion deal. The implications are big for the Triangle, where the bulk of EMC's 1,600 North Carolina employees work. Executives hailed the buyout when it was announced October 12, with CEO Michael Dell touting the benefits of being a private company. We can make investments that may not have an immediate return, he says, pointing to a recent Dell investment in 2,000 new sales jobs. But it's unclear whether that means growth for EMC's Triangle headcount, which, like other EMC operations across the globe, have had layoffs over the years as competition heats up from competitors like NetApp and Nimble Storage. Longtime EMC partner Lenovo also had a big Triangle presence. In addition to the partnership concerns, Lenovo executives are surely watching the competitive impact a bulked-up Dell could have on the enterprise market. It's an obvious area of interest to Lenovo, as Lenovo made a big investment last year with the buy of IBM's Research Triangle Park-based low-end server business. And in a section called He Said It, Joe Tucci, CEO of EMC, says, I believe that this transaction will put EMC and our terrific people in the best position possible to thrive in a new world order. Industrial Heat adds lab space to pursue cold fusion research. Industrial Heat is expanding its operations into a 20,000-square-foot lab space in Cary, where it hopes its controversial nuclear technology could make its first big proven breakthrough. We're growing the business, and we're interested. It's technology that certainly needs a lot of research and a lot of work, says Tom Darden, founder of Cherokee Investment Partners and an outspoken backer and investor in Industrial Heat. Industrial Heat spun out of controversial research by a man named Andrea Rossi and has raised at least $11 million from investors such as Darden. Rossi's technology, dubbed ECAT, is a black box that, according to reports, uses cold fusion to generate large amounts of green energy cheaply. Darden sees it as an alternative to the coal plants pumping pollutants into the sky and says his team is increasingly interested in funding the work. He is absolutely not ready to release a timeline as to when data will be available, however. And finally, LED-CFL gap narrows in the Carolinas. Over the past 3 years, the LED-CFL market share gap has been decreasing when it comes to a Duke Energy discount program, which offers bulbs from various retailers such as Cree and Feet Electric at various retailers. As LED prices come down and they are starting to overtake the CFL products in the Duke Energy Progress Program, and we expect that trend to continue, says Duke spokesman Jeff Brooks. And now we turn to the On Transportation page written by Jeff Jeffrey. The first headline, North Carolina Appeals Court Blocks Water Regs. North Carolina's top environmental officer praised a decision by a federal appeals court that put a nationwide stay on new Environmental Protection Agency rules that greatly expanded the number of streams and wetlands under federal protection as a big win for farmers in the state. In a 2-1 ruling October 9, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit in Cincinnati said the EPA's new clean water rule should be put on hold across the nation while the court decides whether it has jurisdiction to consider lawsuits challenging the new regulations. 18 states, including North Carolina, sued the EPA earlier this year, arguing the rules were an unconstitutional overreach by federal officials that threatens to upset the federal-state balance in how the nation's waters are protected. The EPA contends the new rules are necessary to provide clarity on which bodies of water should receive federal protection. Writing for the majority, Judge David McKeague expressed concern about the process used by the EPA to draft the rules, saying it was facially suspect. A stay temporarily silences the whirlwind of confusion that springs from uncertainty about the requirements of the new rule and whether they will survive legal testing, McKeague says. North Carolina Environmental Quality Secretary Donald Vandervart says the tighter restrictions would have hurt the value of farmland in the state and made it more difficult for farmers to obtain necessary credit to expand or to buy equipment. We're very happy with the court's decision because North Carolina has one of the most vibrant agricultural industries in the country, he says. Downtown Raleigh bridge projects might spur new development. Raleigh planning officials say the $75 million effort to replace bridges at P Street and Wade Avenue could provide greater development opportunities along Capitol Boulevard near downtown. The North Carolina Department of Transportation is scheduled to break ground next July on the replacement for the bridge carrying Capitol Boulevard over Wade Avenue. NCDOT crews would begin work on the bridge carrying Capitol Boulevard over P Street the following year. The entire project is expected to take until 2019 to complete, likely causing traffic delays during the interim. Northbound lanes on Capitol will be closed from P Street to Wade Avenue for 2 years as construction proceeds. Eric Lamb, a transportation planner for Raleigh, unveiled options for what the completed bridges could look like during a presentation to City Council. Council members signed off on improved lighting and decorative elements, such as oak leaf medallions, but nixed the idea of including columns. The plan for the project includes a new park near the interchange between Capitol Boulevard and P Street. NCDOT, which is partnering with the city on the project, estimates the two bridge replacements will cost $74.6 million to complete. Raleigh is expected to contribute about $8 million to the project, including about $1.6 million in lighting and aesthetic improvements approved during the meeting. The North Carolina Capital Area Metropolitan Planning Organization will provide $6.6 million for the project. Lamb says one point he wanted to make during his presentation was that every dollar that goes to the bridge replacement project is a dollar that will not be available for other infrastructure projects, including the effort to improve the Beltline in Southwest Raleigh. Raleigh Planning Director Ken Bowers says once the project is complete, it will help knit together Glenwood South and the Seaboard area. It will also open up new areas for commercial development, he says, because the new P Street interchange will make it easier to travel in multiple directions. You'll have greater access into the area from Capitol Boulevard, Bowers says. Both of the existing bridges are classified as structurally deficient due to their age. The P Street Bridge was built in 1948 and has a sufficiency rating of 44.9 out of a possible 100. The Wade Avenue Bridge was built in 1954, has a sufficiency rating of 34.1, and is posted with a weight limit. While the existing bridges are still adequate to support traffic, they are nearing the end of their design lives and need to be replaced in a timely manner, NCDOT says. And finally, in a section called She Said It, the quote is from Rachel Brewster, co-director of Duke Law's Center for International and Comparative Law, on the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement between the U.S., Japan, and 10 other Pacific Rim nations. The deal must still be approved by Congress. That is likely to be a big benefit to U.S. pharmaceutical businesses in the Triangle because every country has to abide by these rules and it gives those companies greater access to huge Asian markets. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we're going to read from a special economic report covering the Research Triangle Region South. And we start with an article headlined, Opportunity in Chatham. Megasite and Chatham Park offer promise for county. And this is written by Dan Hedrick. Tucked in a pie slice between old U.S. 421 and U.S. 64 in western Chatham County is an 1,800-acre megasite industrial officials hope someday will be the home to North Carolina's first automobile plant. If it ever comes true, it would be the biggest local jobs news since the chicken plant in Siler City folded 10 years ago, taking with it the 1,800 jobs it once provided at its peak. Siler City has had its losses, says Diane Reed, president of the Chatham County Economic Development Corporation, for the past 8 years. It's been a roller coaster. One of our key goals is to increase jobs in Chatham County. The need is urgent. Wages in the county are far below the state average, $600 per week versus about $900 per week. Although the county has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the state, still only 9% of taxes come from commercial and industrial operations. The tax base is extremely skewed toward residential, Reed says. Residential development pays for the county's service. To kickstart Chatham's economy, officials have launched bold initiatives to capture the rising tide of onshoring for advanced manufacturing, while supporting local companies and a thriving arts and music community. The Chatham-Siler City Advanced Manufacturing, or CAM, site to the west, near the Randolph County line, doesn't look like much: open fields, dirt roads, and scrub vegetation. Last summer, however, the site won certification, which means any industry can come in and be operational within a year. A Norfolk Southern rail line runs along about a mile of the track. Duke Energy can send 230 kilovolts of electricity there. PSNC can deliver natural gas. Siler City has 2 million gallons a day of water and wastewater service to provide. It's already zoned for heavy industrial use, and thousands of people are itching to work. Chatham got close to landing a car company until South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley announced in May that Volvo picked her state out of four to build its first North American assembly plant that expected to produce 100,000 cars per year. It's South Carolina's third car company. In March, Mercedes-Benz announced plans to build an assembly facility there, and BMW started making cars in the Palmetto State 20 years ago. The CAM site in Chatham was already for Volvo. The state was not. Funding for the Job Development Investment Grants, JDIG, the state's main industrial incentive, had run out. Our hands were tied behind us, says Nat Taylor of Taylor & McChesney, the firm marketing the CAM site. There are about a dozen industry site selectors in the country, and they knew North Carolina was out of business. We didn't have anything to offer anyone. We certainly were not competitive with South Carolina. In late September, Governor Pat McCrory approved the replenishment of the JDIG funds, increasing the cap from $15 million to $20 million and extending funding up to $35 million for high-yield jobs, $500 million investment, and 1,750 jobs. As great as the home runs are like an automobile plant, it doesn't come along that often, says Christopher Chung, president and CEO of Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, a nonprofit organization that does business and industry development for the state. There are some rumors that we could have some Asian companies looking to build auto plants in the United States, but I think we're 5 years away from that, he adds. Chatham officials aren't waiting around. To the east, in Moncure, county officials are working with private landowners to get about 1,000 acres certified with the state for industrial development. The Moncure industrial site has about 2,700 acres. About 400 acres had at one time housed polyester fiber manufacturing and fabric operations. About 1,000 people work there now, making fiberboard, resin, plywood, and bricks. McCallum Sweeney Site Consultants, which also assessed the Siler City megasite, suggested in its report that automotive parts, aviation, and plastics manufacturers would be appropriate targets for the Moncure industrial site. To the north, an ambitious 40-year project of a different sort is underway, Chatham Park. The mixed-use development covers 7,100 acres and hopes to attract 50,000 residents and commercial spaces for R&D, corporate headquarters, and professional offices, as well as 2,000 acres of open space. Right now, a 25,000-square-foot medical office building and a 10-bed hospice facility are under construction, and the town of Pittsboro has approved permits for two additional buildings. An economic impact study by Michael Walden of NC State University projected that Chatham Park will create 61,000 jobs in Chatham County when completed. And our next article is also written by Dan Hedrick. The headline: Rural but Ready for Growth. Harnett's assets include I-95 access, industrial parks. People are moving to the quiet rural county just south of the Triangle, More than 1,500 newcomers arrived over the past 5 years, and more than 15,000 newcomers arrived over the past 5 years, and another 15,000 are expected to move in over the next 5 years, according to the latest census data. With one of the fastest population growth rates in the region, nearly 148,000 people are expected to call Harnett County home by 2020. What will they do for a living? How can small local governments with small budgets provide more water and sewer, police, and fire protection? And how might that rising tide of human talent be harnessed? That's what Nick Dula thinks about. We're a rural county with a lot of land area and low population density, but we're growing. We must increase our tax base. That's why entrepreneurs are so important. We're trying to cultivate an entrepreneurial culture, said Dula, the county's chief industry booster, who, 18 months ago, reopened the shuttered offices of economic development, dusted off a dormant 15-year-old plan, and set about trying to identify Harnett's assets. People, it turns out, rank high on the list. 2 out of 3 residents commute outside the county for work. Unemployment hovers above 7%. Per capita annual income is projected to remain stagnant at about $20,000 over the next 4 years, according to the county's own estimates, even as the population is expected to keep climbing in that period. Dula, who was the downtown economic development director in his hometown of Lenoir for 4 years before taking the job in Harnett County in March 2014, needs to get people organized. We're building the infrastructure. I'm having to rebuild the office. No one has any staff or money to do it, so we need each other, he says. He's networking with Prosperity Zone contacts at the state level, reaching out to economists, industry leaders, business development experts, and academics at surrounding universities. Campbell University's Lundy Fetterman School of Business has jumped in to organize economic development symposiums, hoping to create momentum among students and local leaders. Dula is spearheading network building through newly revived organizations, such as the nonprofit Harnett Forward Together Committee. He's reaching out to leaders in Coates, Lillington, Dunn, Anger, and Irwin. Dula is building directories and identifying people with drive and good ideas. He's setting up meet and greets, online business directories, and a nanobater to match entrepreneurs with nothing but an idea and a dream with resources, mentors, and experience. Christopher Chung, President and CEO, Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, EDPNC, runs the nonprofit corporation that oversees the state's business development, job recruitment and retention, international trade, tourism, film, and sports. Harnett County, like a lot of rural counties, doesn't have the assets other counties enjoy, he said. But every community has something they can bring to the table, Chung said. Harnett's got a couple of big distribution operations. They've got I-95. A lot of what we rely on our partners to do on the business recruitment side of the job is to go out there and uncover potential deals. A lot of communities just don't have a lot of available buildings. These are the fundamental challenges counties have to deal with. The county has 3 industrial parks, Brightwater Science and Technology Park, about 200 acres near Lillington to the north, is marketed to mostly biotech and healthcare companies. Edgerton Industrial Park lies to the east near Dunn. About half of the Western Industrial Park to the west, where the population is thinnest, was taken over by a concrete block manufacturer recently. Some new business wins are beginning to stack up. Rooms to Go opened a new 1.45 million square foot retail and distribution center just off I-95 north of Dunn. The new warehouse puts about 225 people to work. The county and the city of Dunn covered most of the $2.5 million it cost to extend water and sewer to the site. The state spent about $3.5 million on highway improvements. A group of developers got Fairfield Inn to build a new $8 million hotel, expected to open in January. About 25 new jobs will come from that project. Dula has a handful of new deals in the works, he says, but he's mostly focused on getting his house in order. We're building the infrastructure. To do some of this organizational capacity development, we need to have a system that works, he says. You have to have ongoing communications with the businesses that you already have. Economic development is not something just the government does, it's something communities do. We want to grow these partnerships until they take on a life of their own. I'm really passionate about this stuff. I love economic development. And the article for Lee County is headlined, Not Your Grandpa's Factory, Targeting New Manufacturing and Energy Sectors. Also written by Dan Hedrick. Jerry Pedley traveled along the rural highways of Wisconsin in September to see for himself how one of his waste filtration control systems was performing on a new site. Later on that trip, he visited a company in Racine just down the road about the equipment his company designed to test oil pumps in Ford F-150s. We've got machines all over the United States, said Pedley, president and owner of Mertech Solutions Incorporated, a 26-year-old automation and process control design manufacturer in Sanford with about 45 employees. Mertech controls are on machines shipped in India, to India and Mexico and Europe, some exported by small local manufacturers, Pedley supplies in his own backyard. Everybody's always looking for ways to improve processes, he says. Bob Joyce, Lee County's new head of economic development, is betting Pedley is right about the future. I want to get us back to where we are a competitive small community in manufacturing, says the 63-year-old former head of the Sanford Area Chamber of Commerce. The critics will say you're still putting eggs in that manufacturer's basket, but Lee County is the place where people make stuff. When you drive into Lee County, the woods are full of machine shops. The Great Recession hit Lee County manufacturing especially hard, and the county's unemployment rate has remained stubbornly high. Even so, about 1 in 3 workers still make a living in manufacturing, according to an analysis by the Southern Growth Policies Board, which helped draft the county's economic plan just 2 years ago. Through the recession, manufacturing hung on. Over the past decade, manufacturing advanced, so did pay. Annual wages jumped from about $31,000 to more than $45,500 in Lee County. Skills elevated along with it. People are often not aware of the manufacturing in their own backyard, says Kathy Swindell, Director of Industry Services at Central Carolina Community College. Her job is to help local industry find qualified workers who are trained in the latest plant floor technology. It isn't your grandpa's factory anymore, she says. At no cost to the employer, the school will train students for the company if the employer creates jobs or invests in other development categories. Currently, Swindell's department is operating 18 programs. 4 new ones have recently been approved. 75% of our programs are for job growth. That's a pretty good sign that things are picking up. Lee County has large manufacturing operations. Cody has a huge cosmetics plant in Sanford. Also, there are Moen, Caterpillar, and Static Control Components, a family-owned company recently acquired by a Chinese company. Pfizer downsized its workforce in recent years, but now works with smaller local companies focused on product and prototype development. Lee County's plan for economic development also includes energy, and earlier this year, the state's moratorium on shale gas exploration in Lee, Moore, and Chatham counties was lifted. But Joyce doesn't think that sector will develop very quickly. Natural gas development in our part of North Carolina seems to be on hold for the near future because of the depressed price of gas nationally, he says. However, if tests show that gas trapped in the Deep River Basin has additional properties other than methane, we may see development happen sooner. Joyce does see a resurgence coming soon to manufacturing, however. The recession forced big companies to become more efficient. Low energy costs, automation, and innovation have reduced operating costs. Smaller companies have hung on. In our smaller companies, innovation and technology continues to drive down costs, Joyce said. Overall, the advanced manufacturing sector is still our number one target. It is our bread and butter, and we're very good at it. On his Wisconsin trip, Pedley said he looked forward to serving up hot dogs at the shop when he got back to Sanford in time for National Manufacturers Day on October 2. He expected lots of visitors. We think about these farmers and their families and how years ago they were able to grow what they needed on a few acres and it took a lot of labor, he says by phone from the road in the Midwest. Now it just takes a few people to farm thousands of acres. Everything's progressing, always doing things faster. The same thing that's been happening for thousands of years. A job in manufacturing is a good living, Pedley says. But you have to keep changing, keep growing. You never know how things are going to be. You can't dig into one thing and stay there forever. You've got to change and grow and watch. And with our remaining time, we'll read as much as we can of the Moore County article, headlined, Entrepreneurs Welcome, Moore County Woos Farmers in Addition to Golfers. Driving along NC-5 between Aberdeen and Pinehurst, beneath the neat tree-lined route that joins the two small towns and runs along beautiful homes and manicured greens, it's hard to imagine that you've entered a tipping point. If DOT widens Highway 5, it could destroy the area, Pat Corso said recently over a green salad lunch at one of Pinehurst's growing number of restaurants. If we're not careful, we could turn into a place where you don't want to be. For Corso, longtime president of the Pinehurst Chamber of Commerce and now head of the county's economic development group, Moore County's future depends on not bungling the good things that golf created decades ago. Golf in the 1980s, 1990s, and early 2000s brought affluence, artsy culture, gourmet dining, and easy living that sustains commercial, retail, and population growth today. The lifestyle attracts families with money and entrepreneurs. As the towns of Pinehurst, Aberdeen, and Southern Pines grow, their borders drawing nearer, Corso sees a growing need for collective decision-making. Without it, preserving the unique quality of life in the county, or at least the wealthy southern region, will get unmanageable. Johnny Ransdell, who grew up in Aberdeen, is chairman of the Aberdeen Planning Board and agrees that a collective approach to planning and development is needed. Generations ago, when towns developed along railroad lines where trains stopped for fuel and water about every 20 or so miles, communities developed their own ways of managing their towns, he said. A lot of towns develop a sort of silo mentality, he said. You've got a situation now where all these towns are blending their borders. You do risk duplicating services. You stand a better chance of attracting things you want to come to the area if you do it regionally. And the article continues discussing how the area has come together, but we have to stop there because we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. You can contact us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.